Let's get back to the drive on the home of the Sens, TSN 1200. Now it's time for Need to Know Basis.
Welcome back to the drive. Lever Sage, AJ, Jackie Beck, Matt Conesvita, AJ and I live at TD Place expecting to talk to Kahari Jones, offensive coordinator for the Red Blacks coming up. But first, here is what you need to know. You need to know that game number three of the Stanley Cup Finals is on TSN 1200 tonight, 7:30, the pregame. Puck drops just after 8 o'clock. Can the Florida Panthers climb their way back in, or will Vegas cement their spot almost unbeatable if they win tonight? Can they do that? We'll see. Can't wait to watch it, AJ. Should be fantastic tonight. Florida Panthers at home against Vegas. Corey Connors, 5 under par, 67. And there are a number of golfers at 5 under, but Corey Connors, how about T1? At the Canadian Open in Hamilton. What a round for him. That'll have people following him, AJ, all afternoon and all weekend long. Incredible stuff there.
Well, the tournament's kind of been overshadowed by all the live stuff, and So great to see a Canadian on top of the leaderboard, and we'll see if he can keep that up.
We told you Dalvin Cook has been told he will be released by the Minnesota Vikings and has already put up a picture dancing in Miami. Is he going to be a Dolphin? We will find out shortly. And that's a little bit of what you need to know.
What you also need to know is the CFL starts tonight.
Yes, of course.
And it's the BC Lions and the Calgary Stampeders. And, of course, the Ottawa Redblacks in action Saturday against the Montreal Alouettes. And we'll have the broadcast for you right here on TSN 1200. You and James Duke Ellingson with a pregame show. And Jeff Avery and I will be in Montreal for the call.
As we welcome our next guest, the offensive coordinator is here. He's smiling. He's ready to go. Kahari Jones, thanks for coming upstairs and making some time for us. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Awesome. It's starting tonight.
I know.
It's exciting. It's just, I'm sure from your perspective, you always hear about what a grind camp is, and probably it feels like the payoff is coming now.
It does. I mean, I know I felt it as a player. I feel it as a coach. I mean, it's tough. It's just 24 hours a day football and working. But when you see that first game, when you know it's about to be here, everything comes back. It just gets exciting. And I feel great for the guys. And I can't wait to get started.
Always smiling. We had Nate Behar up here before. He's like, I haven't heard of negative word from Kahari. He's like, he's always smiling. He's always finding the positive in everything that you're doing. What's it been like coming in and kind of setting up and getting your offense under control? You got four quarterbacks right now on the roster. You got a whole bunch of receivers looking for time. So what has it been like for you to come in and try and make everybody happy and get the offense rolling?
It's been good so far. I mean, you know, the proof is in the pudding. You have to put it out there on the field. But I like what I've seen, especially in the first two preseason games. You know, you practice things, you feel good about it, and then you get it out into the game, and you get a feel for it. And I really am happy with what I've been seeing so far. Of course, there's always things to improve. There's always things to get better, but we have a good group. I really like the. It starts with the O-line. I mean, you know, the guys up front are doing their thing and protecting the quarterbacks, giving them time to find people. And yeah, that's all you can ask for is just a group that's willing to work day in and day out. And Nate is one of those guys who, you know, just comes to work and he's willing to do anything. So it makes life easier when you have players like that.
Let's talk about the quarterback position. It's a position you obviously know very well. Just in terms of what you saw from We'll start with Jeremiah Masoli. What did you see from him, especially in the couple of weeks when he took the reps, and how do you see his progress coming along here?
Yeah, I'm really excited about Jeremiah. You know, he's everything that I thought he would be on and off the field. You know, being able to do what he's been doing on the field after, you know, a major surgery is pretty incredible, and he looks great. He's moving well. He's doing some really good things in there, and so I'm excited to see what the future holds for him, because I know he has a lot of football left, and he's itching to get back out on the field. Nick has played really well. I'm really impressed with how he's taken to my style of coaching, and he's solid, just a solid quarterback. And then you got Tyree Adams, who, you know, can move, can run, can throw the ball, just Mr. Excitement out on the football field, and he's got a really bright future ahead of him. And you get a guy like Dustin Crum too, who I was excited to see in the game. I thought he was doing some really good things at practice, and he was able to transfer them out to the game, which is tough to do for a young player. So I love the quarterback room, and now it's just getting out there on the field and showing what they can do.
With Nick, how much easier is it for a quarterback? I mean, he got thrust into a difficult spot last year, traded mid-season to a team that hadn't won a game, learning a new offense. As a quarterback, how much easier is it to just come in on day one and learn the offense and just be there from the get-go?
Yeah, it's like night and day, you know. It's, you want to be judged when you're at your best and when you feel comfortable, when you know the offense, when you've lived it and been involved in it, and it's a process. You know, it's tough to kind of be thrust in any situation, and so I think it's really helped him to have the whole off season to, you know, be able to throw with these guys, to be able to absorb, you know, the offense and us to have meetings and everything. And so you can see he's very comfortable out there, and that's what you want as a quarterback. You want a guy to be comfortable and feel good about what you're doing and be able to just react to what you see out there.
You mentioned your coaching style. What is your coaching style?
I think of it as being a teacher. I just want to help these guys to achieve their goals. And so I'm, you know, I try to be positive, and I am a pretty positive guy. But I also am big to correct guys and big to make sure that they're doing the right thing. And I root for these guys. I want them to be as good as they can be. I know what it's like being out on the field. I know how tough it is, and you know, all the criticism, all the praise, all of that, all the stuff that goes with it. And so I want to be make sure that I'm somebody who is who's very authentic and myself all the time, but I want to make sure I'm trying to get the best out of them, and I think they feel that, I think they know that, and I'm just going to continue to try to be me.
When it comes to the receivers, there's a couple of good ones in Shaq Evans and COC Mariner that are banged up right now. So what do you make of the group that you've got and the group that you're going to Montreal with?
Yeah, I'm excited about the group. I mean, it's unfortunate with Shaq. He was having a great preseason, and I was really looking forward to seeing him out on the field, but we will see him, and so I know it's going to happen. And COC, again, same thing. He's been kind of banged up from the beginning, but he'll get there as well, and he showed us a little glimpse in the second preseason game, but the guys that we have are solid, and you know, starts with Acklin. You know, the things that he did last year were pretty incredible, and we expect him to pick up from that and be even better. Hardy is having a great camp, and I really love what I see out of Hardy, and I've had Quan Bray already, and Quan is somebody who, you know, was a big part of my offense in 2019, and played with him again in 21, and so I know what he can do, and he's chomping at the bit. He's ready to go out there, and of course Nate is somebody I'm excited about. coaching and seeing out on the field. He was having a very good year before he got hurt last year, and so yeah, we got a good group, and you know, people are coming up as well, Brugling, and we're gonna get a few more people healthy, and Scarver is there. He's, you know, he's shown some flashes, and so we got a good group, and that's why you have a full team. That's why you have all these guys out there, because it has to be that next man up mentality, and we feel like we have enough to win.
We had Acklin there at the quarterback club a couple of nights ago, and he was talking about, I got to block better this year. I got to block better. So he's on record. He said himself he's got to block a little bit better than he did previously, and that's what he was working on the offseason. But you're mentioning the group. It's not only to have the next guy if somebody gets injured, but I would imagine as a coach it's fantastic to have a deep group, because if everybody's healthy – they're going to know they're going to have to play well, because there's a bunch of guys sitting there that want to play and want to get on the field. And, you know, Braylon Addison was also brought in, and he might not be ready for another month or so, but when he gets back, he'll be pushing for a spot too. That competition within the group. Yeah. How much does it push, guys?
Oh, it's big. It's big, because you know you have to be at your best all the time, and you want that. You don't want guys to be able to rest on their laurels and say, hey, I did this last game. No. What have you done this game? What have you done this week? What have you done this day? And those are the things that we have to keep pushing with these guys. And you know, Travis Moore is great. He pushes those guys. He makes sure that they're held accountable each and every day. And we have a deep group, and it's going to be nice, because there's going to be times when, you know, player A takes center stage, player B, player C, whoever it is. But as long as everybody is doing their job and helping us to win football games, I think it's going to be a solid, cohesive group.
It's a homecoming for you on Saturday. I mean, you can say that. It's the CFL. There'd be multiple homecomings, you know, from your playing days, from your coaching days. Yeah. But does this one mean a lot to you, in the sense that, you know, this is the place that you were the head coach? I thought you did a heck of a job there as well, just in real trying circumstances. Not a lot of stability off the field. So what about just going back to a place that you know, you coached a lot of these guys on the other side?
Yeah. It was always a little different, especially when it's new, but you know, and I enjoyed the city of Montreal and the people there and everything, and had a good, you know, 5 years, four plus years of being there, but Ottawa is my spot, and I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to be with the Red Blacks, and so I don't think it'll hold anything, you know, super special. We play them, heck, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 times, whatever it is, but it's just trying to get wins and trying to help this team. I haven't really thought about it all that much, just because been just so focused on our team, and I'm sure, you know, maybe some emotions will come up here or there, but the big thing is just going out there and letting the players play and letting them do their thing.
I think one of the similarities, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that, you know, you went through some trying circumstances in Montreal. The players here went through some trying circumstances, and it just feels like this is a pretty cohesive group. And, you know, how important, I mean, you've been a huge part, whether you're on the field coaching, to know what that is and to know how important it is for a football team. And when you don't have it, it can be hard week to week, the grind. So just maybe speak to this group, because it feels like this group here in Ottawa is different, and for you to come in and be a part of it going through your own trying circumstances has to feel good.
It has a lot of similarities, and I think back to, you know, in 2018 when I was the offensive coordinator in Montreal, we had, you know, won 5 games, and then I was able to take over in 2019, and you know, bringing that team together was the biggest hurdle, and making sure that the guys believed in each other and believed in the group that we had assembled. And I feel like Coach Dice is doing the same thing here and putting together a group of players, putting coaches that he trusts, that trust each other. And I think you're seeing that each and every day. I think you're seeing it out on the football field that we're gonna be tough on them at times, but we also care and we also believe in each other, and that's big and that goes a long way, and that sometimes is more than the X's and O's with a team, is that you know you can battle through tough times and come out on the other side, and I feel like we're building that kind of team, and so hopefully it's correct.
What's it like working with Bob Dice?
It's great. It's great. We have had a long history. So he was with me in Winnipeg when I was a player, you know, when he first started his CFL career. I liked him then, and I still like him now. He's just a great guy. He's his authentic self. He does things the right way. He's a good man. When he gave me the call, I jumped at the opportunity to work with him again. We were fortunate enough to win a Grey Cup together in Saskatchewan. And being on the same staff there for a couple of years, and so we've always crossed paths through the years and everything, and so now it's nice to see him in this role, and he's taken to it like gangbusters. He's made for it, and this is the right job, the right man for the right job.
Do you want to ask about the running back position as well? And just the philosophy of what it's going to be like. A ratio obviously plays a part in it, but what have you seen so far in camp for guys trying to step up and take that number one spot?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because we have a few guys that we feel really good about, and so it starts with Devontae, and he's doing a very good job, but I'm sure, you know, we're going to have different people doing different things back there, and so I'm excited to see how it unfolds. As long as we're blocking up front, as long as we're doing the right things up front, we're going to gain yards, and we're going to run the ball, and so I'm that's the one spot where I'm like, let's see how this unfolds, let's see where it goes, but we have some plans.
Those new ratio rules, I think it probably affects the defense more than the offense here, but what do you make of them? Because a lot of fans don't really understand them.
I don't try to get too deep into it. I just, you know what, we're just putting the plan together and kind of playing the guys that we're going to play, and we feel like it's going to fit the ratio and the rules around it, but it's just one of those things that, you know, some teams are going to use it maybe a little bit more than others. I know it gives us Deadman a little bit more in the fold to be able to use on offense, but you know, as far as that goes, though, we're just going to run what we do and let the numbers take care of themselves, and they'll tell us if we're close.
I was just going to ask you about Devontae Deadman, and you know, a lot of people gravitate towards him when he came back in here last year, and the first game, and everyone was ready to go for Devontae Deadman, and Edmonton didn't kick to him. Mm-hmm. And it was like, wow, like this guy hasn't even played this year, and they're kicking away from the guy. Yes. How do you get him involved? How do you try and use him the best that he can possibly be? And can that be at receiver? Can that be at running back? Can that be wherever?
Yeah, I mean, you said it. It can be wherever a little bit, but it's just about, you know, finding the different ways, the different combinations to use him, and it'll be a process throughout the year. He's been a little banged up, so he was somebody who, you know, he just kind of started getting back to full speed. So we're going to integrate him into what we do offensively as we go. But I have some plans for him, and we've talked about it. But hopefully, you know, he can be the dynamic returner that I know he can be, because that's the big job. And then if we can use him on offense, you know, I had a guy similar to him in BC, Chris Rainey. He reminds me a little bit of him, and I was, as a coordinator, I was able to, you know, it's funny because Wally didn't want me using him on offense, but I would sneak him in the fourth quarter, and he'd make some big plays for us and do some good things, and he was okay with it then. But yeah, it's one of those things where you just have to be wise and smart with it and find the right combination.
1997 is when you arrived in the Canadian Football League with the BC Lions, and you've been as a player or a coach here ever since. What is it about this league, this country, that's made you become a CFL lifer and a guy that spent over 25 years in Canada now?
Yeah, it's amazing now. I mean, let alone a Canadian citizen, me and my wife both, you know. So it's just been an amazing ride, and we've loved it ever since we've gotten here. You know, I just felt, first of all, the football side, I just felt at home being a quarterback and you know, experiencing three down football. I knew it was the right football for me, and with the big field and being able to throw the ball like we could, it was just exciting and fun. And then when having the opportunity to you know, be a broadcaster for a little bit and then coach and now coaching for, you know, 15 years, it's a dream come true, you know, to be able to be in football this long, and hopefully I'm in for quite a while longer. But I love Canada. I've lived all over.
Just gonna say, you've lived everywhere.
Yeah. I've been involved with every team except Toronto, and I'm fine with where I'm at. So, but yeah, as either a player or coach, I've experienced kind of everywhere, and so it's been an amazing ride, and so still got a lot more winning to do and helping teams, but I couldn't have asked for anything more. My wife and I, we had both of our daughters, one in Winnipeg, one in Calgary. They're Canadian citizens as well, and U.S. too, but it's been outstanding.
And Ottawa, what's your impression? I mean, obviously you've been here for Renegades games and Red Blacks games, but now that you're on the home side, what's it like living here?
I love it. I've always loved it from afar, you know, and all the players and coaches that I've heard talk about it, they've always you know, spoke so well of Ottawa. Now I see why. You know, I'm here living downtown, and I'm a big walker, so I try to walk home as much as I can and see the city and experience it, and it's been great. It's been fantastic. And so I try to pick a different way to walk every day, go down Bank Street, go down the canal, do all sorts of things. And so I can't wait to explore even more. But I really love the city. It's just vibrant. And hopefully the plan is to win a lot for the city and get this stadium packed.
It's actually fairly incredible listening to you, because most Canadians like me, like, I've never lived in, you know, as many places in Canada that you would have. And to have lived all across this country, what an amazing thing to be able to do, and to relate some different experiences to the players who are coming in, and they're coming in as fast as you. So do you talk about that? Do you talk about other things like that with players sometimes?
Oh yeah, definitely. And like you said, I feel really fortunate that I've been able to, you know, live in all the different, you know, cities that I have.
Even Hamilton?
Provinces.
No, I'm
just... I lived in Burlington. I lived in Oakville.
There you go.
I was in Hamilton. I love Hamilton too. You know what? And that's been the coolest thing, you know, because, you know, even the cities that people talk about and do different things, I mean, Winnipeg and Regina and all these places, they're great. And once you live there and get to know the people you know, winters are crazy in many places. But I've learned to embrace the winters too, and I live in BC in the off season, and you know, I've gotten rid of a few shovels because
I was going to say, is that embracing winter or just being smart about winter?
Exactly. You get more rain than snow, but I do love it when the snow comes out, because it's like, all right, I'm back in some of my old places.
Last one, you're watching BC Calgary tonight. He kind of just. It's the season. I know you got to get ready for Saturday, but as a CFL lifer, is that exciting for you that it's opening night around the league?
It is. It is. It always is exciting to get the season started and see, and, you know, and I have friends that coach on every team. I've probably coached some players on most teams, so, you know, excited to see them and do do all those things. I'll probably be asleep maybe because
yeah, 9 o'clock start.
Yeah, I'll probably have to catch a rerun or something. But as far as the season starting, it's always exciting. And so, you know, all the possibilities are open. Every team is feeling the same way. But I know I feel good about this team, and that's what counts.
Well, you can catch Kahari Jones walking around Ottawa and catch him on the sideline with the Ottawa Redblacks. So we actually mentioned last Friday for the preseason game, we were doing the broadcast outside the Aberdeen Pavilion. Kahari Jones just walks by, like, with all the people. He's got his backpack on. It's like, nobody really is bothering. Nobody knows. He's just walking through with all the patrons going in to get their running tabs that day.
Yes, I remember.
And I'm like, we actually brought up, hey, there's Kahari Jones. Nobody else knows, but there he is, walking with his backpack, and he's coming to work, and he's ready to go. We can't wait to talk to you throughout the season, and good luck on Saturday.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
There goes Kahari Jones, offensive coordinator for your Ottawa Redblacks. Take a quick break and come back with more of The Drive, live from TD Place here on TSN 1200.
The Drive continues on TSN 1200.
Welcome back to The Drive. Lever Sage, AJ Jack, you're back live from TD Place. Matt Connors Vita with you as well. As you said to me, AJ, on the break, a couple of really good interviews. Nate Bahar, Kahari Jones. Tough not to get excited if you are a football fan in this city about what's to come, but we're going to find out sooner rather than later. You're on your way to Montreal tomorrow, and Red Blacks and Alouettes Saturday night, right back here a week today for the home opener. So we got two games coming up within a week. I'm excited.
It is exciting, and let's see how they do. I think they have to start out strong, and that means I don't care how they do it, but they better have a win when they go into the bye week. You don't want to be going into that bye week 0-2, but I think there's a lot of optimism, and I think sometimes you hear optimism, but you maybe don't believe it. I think they do believe it.
Yeah.
I think in that room, they believe that things are going to be different if you've been here before. So let's see. They still have to go out and prove it, and that starts in Montreal. But I think it really lifts the pressure a little bit if you go out and get that first win. And then once you get the home win, as Nate Bahar said, then all that noise can kind of go to the background a little bit because you've at least silenced it. But they've brought it upon themselves, not the new players or the new coaches or anything like that. But I've talked about that numerous times, about the baggage, whether it's the Toronto Maple Leafs, whether it was the Chicago Cubs or the Boston Red Sox, or you look at the Detroit Lions, it's not... Look, it's not Dan Campbell's fault that the Lions did things a certain way in the 60s and were bad, and they're bad in the 70s and they're bad in the 80s and so on and so forth. But when you are the coach of the Detroit Lions, you're inheriting that baggage. Now, it hasn't been that long for the Ottawa Redblacks. They've just been so bad the last three seasons, and especially at home. And so once you go out and get a win or two at home, I think then all of a sudden that sort of talk goes away. But you still have to go out and find a way to do it.
It'd be great to get all of that done within a week.
Yeah.
And then you're 2-0, and then let's just see how the season goes. Like, let's go after that. So
But, I mean, they just have to focus on week one and Montreal and a team that most people don't think is going to be very good. So go out and impose your will on them and find a way to get a W. Think back to 2015. They started, of course, they were 2-16 the year before. They hadn't won a road game ever. They were 0-9 on the road. There weren't really any road games. I'm trying to think. Like, there were some home games that they blew some opportunities, but and I get they were close, but you can't really think of, I think Saskatchewan is one. They lost in overtime in Saskatchewan in year one. There you go.
Okay.
2014. But
because all I kept thinking about was 7-5 and 10-8.
Yeah, well, that's 7-5 against BC, 10-8 against Edmonton.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting times as well. But they went out in week one, and they got a win in Montreal, and boom, there's no more talk about never winning a road game.
Yep.
And we saw that season win. It is the best season in Ottawa Red Blacks history. They won 13 games. Yeah, they didn't win the Grey Cup that year, but they won 12 games in the regular season. They won a dramatic East final and lost a very close Grey Cup to a very good Edmonton team, but it set the table and they found a way to win it the next year. But it started in week one. It started on the road in Montreal, and we'll see if they can get it done Saturday.
All right, let's turn our attention to a little hockey, and obviously the Alex DeBrincat stuff has got to new levels since we got off the air yesterday because of the list of teams. Our TSN1200.ca web poll of the day brought to you by the Tool and Equipment Store. What is the preferred return on an Alex DeBrincat trade? Is it similar goal-scoring forward, added depth middle six, a goaltender, or a first-round futures? Your four options at TSN1200.ca.
Well, the return that you get, to me, I'm just all about maximizing return, and then you can do with the return after that what you want to fix your roster. So if you feel like you need more goal scoring, you don't have to necessarily go out and address that in the trade itself. You could address it in another trade beyond that if you get better assets. So get the best assets and then use them to address whatever needs you need to address. I think it's definitely something forward-wise. I think you said defense, did you not?
Yeah, I was looking to pick a defenseman here.
Okay.
I couldn't in the four options,
so
I had to pick something else. I didn't realize that there would be four options in getting and shoring up your defense. Because I looked at it, and quickly, and you can talk about this, but I looked at it a little bit like their defense is really up and coming, and I feel like it's going to be a strong suit for them. But I look at what the Devils did. I look at Carolina's defense. I look at other defense scores and go, what if you could just get another guy? Like, it feels easier to me. Like, if you go out and get a $4 to $5 million player that can shore up your defense even more, that to me is easier than going, especially for the Senators, who have struggled at finding that middle six guy to be the right fit. I look at those defense corps and look how far those teams went this year. They're the backbone of the teams. And said, why can't that be Ottawa? Because Ottawa has such great strength there already. I would be most sure if this team went out and made a deal tonight about getting that defenseman that I know was a really good $3, $4 million defenseman and then gives them some flexibility as well. That's where I would want to see it. I don't want to see, well, it's Jacob Bernard Docker's position to lose and you don't really know what's happening. Like, let's just shore it up so people look at Ottawa and go, that's one of the best defense scores in the league. That's where I would have done with this, but I didn't have that option, AJ, so I picked first round and futures.
Well, if the problem is it's tough to acquire defensemen, but if that's the best offer that you get, it does give you flexibility, including maybe shipping out another defenseman. If that's what you decide to do.
Well, Alex DeBrincat's a pretty good piece to be able to try, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, those players are tough to get. But when you have a chip like DeBrincat, it's at least a little bit easier to go out and try.
My philosophy would be, okay, so DeBrincat and his agent give you a list of teams that they're willing to extend with. So you start to go to those teams. And you listen about what they are willing to offer, and you at least have some parameters about what you might be able to get, and you go back and forth with the various GMs. And to me, it's not about forwards, defensemen, goalies, old, young, draft picks, prospects, whatever. Just get the best possible deal. If all of a sudden you're getting a haul from one team and it happens to be prospects and a defenseman, well, then so be it. You've got chips to basically throw in for another trade to get forwards, which are a lot easier to acquire, especially wingers, because I don't think they need a center. They've got pretty good 1-2-3 with Pinto 3 and Norris 2 and Stützle 1. So wingers are probably the easiest players to acquire, and it's probably the biggest need on this hockey team, unless you're talking about a goaltender, who I just don't think it makes a lot of sense. Well, you definitely want to go out and address it. I just don't know if it makes a lot of sense addressing it in this type of deal. Might be free agency. It might be something else. So
30% voted goaltender with this type of deal.
I mean, perfect scenario if you can find it, sure. But I don't think you can just base your trade on the fact that you want to get a goaltender back.
I would agree. I don't even know that there's a goalie out there that I would be, okay, it's all solved. Every worry we ever had about goaltending, it's solved now that this guy's here. What did you vote?
Middle six.
Middle six? So
in a perfect world.
Similar goal scoring forward, 39% leads the way. And then goaltender, 30%. And then added depth, middle six, 25%. First and future is only 6% of the vote.
I'm actually, in a perfect world, I'm getting middle six and futures. Right? Because you're giving up a player that's probably going to sign for $8 million plus. I think he's going to sign for more than what Cole Caulfield just signed for. Better production. More of a known quantity. Not that Cole Caulfield's not a known quantity, and he's going to score goals, and he's going to be a great player.
There's a track record there.
But you're talking about two 40-goal seasons. So you don't have to go out. You can go out and trade the $8 million player and get a $4 million player plus futures, and I'd feel pretty good because you've got a little bit more cap space to go get a goaltender then, and you've got some futures to either use or use them as trade chips.
But would you feel confident in Pierre Dorion and this management group going and getting that $4 million forward that you know, okay, yeah, that guy's going to – that's what we need. For me, I think that's really hard to get my brain around, that they can assess that properly.
Well, the track record is mixed at best. So can they? The Carlson trade shows that they can go out and consummate a pretty good deal. But there's a lot of misses in the last few years as well. So
yeah, I think he can make a good deal. I just wonder about that particular middle six, like the Nick Paul for Matthew Joseph deal. Like, oh, we're bringing a guy back in that he fits in, and it's like, okay, does he? I'm not sure. So that's...
Yeah, they screwed that one. They screwed that one up. Simple. Right. Like, at the time, I was open to seeing where it went, but hindsight has told us that they got that one wrong. So, yeah, it doesn't have to be a Nick Paul type player. I mean, it might be a guy that's better offensively than him. A 40, 50-point guy.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to be a 20 or 30-point guy. It could be a 40 or 50-point guy that fits in, whether it's second or third-line player, and then get something along with that, which you can either parlay or use it. Go from there. But I don't think you have to just go out and seek the best offensive player possible in this deal. Go get the best package back for the Ottawa Senators in the long haul.
All right, we'll take your text at 12-1200 about what you would do with Alex DeBrincat. And again, the votes, they say similar goal scoring forward leading the way. So they want, hey, if he was going to score 40 goals, they want another guy to be able to put up that kind of production. We'll come back. Tim Higgins in the 4 o'clock hour, going to be inducted into the Ottawa Sports Hall of Fame. Look forward to catching up with Higgy and talk about the finals tonight. Game number 3, Florida Panthers. Can they get back in it tonight at home against Vegas? We'll have it for you. 7:30 the pregame, 8 o'clock, drop of the puck right here on TSN 1200.
Let's get back to the drive on the home of the Sens, TSN 1200.
Welcome back to the drive. Lever Sage, AJ Jakubek live from TD Place. Matt Conazvito with you as well. Couple of notes. Kevin Weeks He's a guy that breaks a lot of news. Well, 50 minutes ago said that the Leafs are naming Shane Doan as an assistant to Brad Treliving in the front office. So Shane Doan going to Toronto, adding a little bit of experience and cachet. What do you think about Shane Doan?
Well, it's his first time outside.
Yeah.
Of the Kamloops Blazers, Winnipeg Jets, or Phoenix / Arizona Coyotes, which essentially was only two different franchises, one in junior hockey and one in the NHL. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know much. I can't speak to how Shane Doan is as an assistant general manager because I have no idea what he's like in that type of role, but certainly an interesting name. And
yeah, really interesting. Also wanted to bring this up to you. So the Canadian Open's going on. And we know Corey Connor shot a 5-under 67. How about Roger Sloan? 3-under 69. Pretty good round today. Bob Weeks saying, legitimately almost missed his tee time. The shuttle from the range, from where they warm up, goes on city streets with no reserve lane, and there's a major traffic jam. The driver of the shuttle had to go into oncoming lanes to make it on time and made it with 2 minutes to spare.
Gotta love Toronto.
It's Hamilton.
I thought...
No, they're at Oakdale, I know.
Yeah, it's not Hamilton.
Imagine being that Roger Sloan. Okay, I've just warmed up on the range. Ready to go. What's this? What's this? And the driver obviously understood the...
Yes.
...the situation. Because if you're driving into oncoming traffic in Toronto to make it,
not ideal. They might want to sort out their logistics for the rest of the week.
I have a feeling this incident might do that.
And I'd say Saturday, Sunday should be fine, but I also know it's Toronto, so it could be Sunday at 3:30 in the morning, and you could find a traffic jam somewhere. We found one. We were talking to you about this the other day, coming back from Guelph.
I didn't know this.
Yep. Basically got on the highway right after the game. It's, I don't know, 11:30 at night. Oh, traffic. Stop dead.
AJ, shouldn't the driver know?
Yeah, I'm not throwing anyone under the bus here.
Traffic, 11:30, Saturday night. Oh, no, it wasn't a Saturday, was it?
No, it was a Thursday night.
It was a Thursday night.
Thursday night at like 11:30.
Stop dead on the
highway. Somewhere around Milton. Good times.
Not ideal.
No.
For the old 5-6 hour bus ride home.
I got another story for you. Before we take our top hour break and come back. And of course, Tim Higgins, 425. Look forward to that chat. So Matt Conisfeed is aware of... not only my affinity for a certain now fourth division soccer team, but my dislike and boycott of a certain airline.
Worlds are colliding, AJ.
Is this your Wrexham story?
So the new Wrexham shirt is out for the upcoming year. There it is right there. United Airlines right in the front, their new sponsor. Kind of feel like I'm not getting a Wrexham shirt.
So would sway you from...
You know what? I've even before I saw this, I was thinking about this actually within the last couple of weeks. And what is the proper amount of time to decide that the boycott is over? Like, you've had such bad service from this company. It could be anything. For a long period of time. It was essentially... 2008 to 2014. So a six-year period where they weren't doing a very good job. And eventually, I had enough. I haven't flown them since. Is it a 10-year statute of limitations on that? Do you say, all right, give these guys a go again in 2024?
It's a good question. My answer would be, it's got to be long enough that if you give them another chance, you can't ride every single thing in the last 10 years based on that new experience. Like, you got to give them a couple of chances. Because we know it doesn't matter what airline you're flying. They all have things that happen and that people don't like. So how long can you go before you can legitimately give them a couple of chances before you say, no, sir?
See, the problem that I had was it was structural. It wasn't like one bad, like I never blame the person working the gate or anything like that. It was a structural problem where just everything they did was so poor. They were late. They'd lose your luggage. You'd go and try and rebook a flight, and they couldn't do it for you because of the way the system is set up. And so finally, it was just like, okay, I've had enough of these guys. It's over. But I wonder if 10 years later,
your
it's different.
Fifth division soccer team that's moved up to the fourth division soccer team is going to change the way you fly. Okay.
I don't know if I give them another chance or not. Is 10 years long enough?
What do you think, Matt?
How long did you boycott Mini Wheats, AJ?
Oh, Mini Wheats is a great cereal, though.
I know,
quite frankly.
But how long did you boycott them?
I don't think it was a real boycott, to be honest.
Okay.
It's not like I was buying Mini Wheats, but if you threw a bowl of Mini Wheats in front of me, it's not like I was saying no. I had Mini Wheats last week a couple of times.
So the boycott is over.
It was a nice surprise. Well, yeah, no, there was never any boycott. It was a nice surprise. I opened my girlfriend's cupboard, and there was Mini Wheats there. I'm like, I'm having some.
Mini
Wheats.
I want the vanilla for so long. Mini Wheats, Wheats, Wheats. It's high in fiber, you can't go wrong.
It's catchy. Brown sugar?
That's just,
it was the brown sugar one, yeah.
It's the best one.
See, that's just, when I think of AJ and boycotts, I do think of United Airlines, but I think of Mini Wheats and the old T-Gore annoying and yet catchy song of the day.
That's not a real one.
Okay, well.
The United one, like I'm looking at this Wrexham shirt right now, and it just looks off. I see the logo, and I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready for it yet.
Actually, I know you're not ready for it yet. Because, again, if you're going back, you got to give anyone a couple of chances before they're going to.
I think the key here is you can support Wrexham. You can get a kit. You can get a kit with the United logo on it. But you're still not flying United.
No, I think I need to fly United first just to see if they've changed a little bit. If they've improved things 10 years later. But if there's still a train wreck, there's no way I'm wearing that.
I'm trying to think what year my train wreck experience was with United. And I hadn't flown them in a long time. And then I think we flew United down to New Orleans, and it went pretty well.
Okay.
But yeah, well,
I
had
give
a
them another chance. I'm all about second chances. I've gave them about six chances from 2008
But
to
this can't be your last chance. That's
14.
What I'm saying. You can't go 10 years and then base everything that you think off one experience if the planes.
Well, depends on exactly where they screw up.
That's what I was going to say, Lee.
If they're half an hour late or 3 hours late or whatever, then so be it. I don't check my baggage anyway, so that wouldn't be a problem. But if it's something structurally that is a major screw up, then.
Matt, can't you see AJ going with his carry-on, though? And then they have that kind of example where you're supposed to put your carry-on in to see if it fits. And AJ somehow doesn't fit into the...
Oh, it would fit.
Yeah, but I can just picture you going to United and trying to jam the bag in. They're telling you, you got to check your luggage because it doesn't fit.
Have you seen how I pack?
Yes, light. Light.
I think what you're saying, though, is if, like, let's say you're trying to get down to Florida and there's a big nor'easter. And so, like, JFK, LaGuardia, Dulles, they're all closed. And it's like, all right, well, there's only so much you can do. And United decides, all right, well, we're going to get you to Charlotte tonight. And then you can call a hotel in Charlotte if you want. And if you tell them that you're a stranded traveler, they might give you a discount. And then we're going to put you on a flight to a different airport in Florida, not Tampa. We're going to send you to Fort Myers the next morning. Like, if that was their solution, I think one chance is enough. Because that's just structurally, as you're saying, AJ, the wrong thing to do. Man. And now I'm remembering my nightmare experience, which was this, and I'm getting angry again. Oh, stupid United.
It wasn't United, but I think you guys are just reminding me of one of my fondest traveling memories where something happened and you're just trying to get rebooked and, you know, you get passed on to the next person. And somebody actually sent me to a place called Customer Solutions. And I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. Like, already I know I'm going to walk up and they are going to solve my problem. They are Customer Solutions.
And did they solve it?
They certainly gave me the address where I could mail in into the mail my complaint, and they would get back to me. Like a letter in the mail.
And did you ever hear back from them?
No, AJ, I was at the airport. I needed to get to Florida. I didn't need to put something in the mail.
Well, that's what I mean.
I was so disappointed with Customer Solutions. Man. We are very late. 580 CFRA News update. Well worth it, though. Come back with what you need to know. Tim Higgins in the next hour. We'll talk about the Stanley Cup Final as well. Game 3 tonight right here on TSN 1200.